sweat the technique.
This is a Veritex Community Bank Roadshow, live from Constellation Field. This is the Killer Bees
on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
ESPN 97.5, ESPN 92.5 out of Constellation Field in Sugarland. Bees broadcasting live here today. Come out to the game tonight. $9.25 tickets. Whenever you enter promo code ESPN 925, so head to the Spacers website. Just get out to the ticket office. Come hang out with us tonight for ESPN 97.5 night at the ballpark. Borny, he talked about the Vlad thing. Michael Schwab dropped that yesterday. Not a lot of people take Schwabby seriously. Like 60-30, can we get serious? We aren't trading for Vladdy. This is such a dumb take, and Schwab has no idea what he's talking about. He's got 1 year of ARB left and then unrestricted free agency. The package wouldn't be worth it. Hmm. So there's a take there from 60-30. It would be pricey. Like 60-30 is right. It would cost you a lot. I don't know if the Astros have the pieces to pull off a Vladimir Guerrero trade.
When you start thinking about just what Michael Bourne just threw out there, if you're starting the discussion with one of their top pitching prospects and Joey Loperfido, I think that's going to change a lot of people's opinions on whether you should do that or not. Now, you know, if you think you can re-sign Vlad Guerrero Jr. in a year plus time,
well, I wouldn't put money on that. I don't think the Astros locked up guys.
That's what I'm saying. And you got Kyle Tucker in a year. I don't think it's something that they're going to do. So you're willing to kind of pull the plug on top prospects like that to get a year and a half of Vlad Jr. Is that worth it?
There was a hypothetical Vlad Guerrero trade offer moving around this morning on the social media stuff. Vlad to the Astros, Blue Jays, Joey Loperfido, AJ Blueball, Jake Bloss. You doing that?
Boy, I think I
Brian's
might.
Brian Jake is nodding his head. Yeah, I wouldn't do that.
It's not two full seasons, but I mean, it's a season and a half. It's close. I mean that's basically what you got Garrett Cole for.
You would also get a half a season. You would also, because you acquired him like for a year plus, like whenever you have a player in your organization for a year, you can offer him salary arbitration. He, of course, would reject it, and you would get compensation. So you would recoup, you know, a draft pick that's after the first round. Mm-hmm. That's part of the calculus. That's part of the equation. I wouldn't do that. And Vlad's really good. Is he a 1,000 OPS guy? No, he's more of an Alex Bregman type of guy. If we're being completely honest, in terms of his overall like production, he's more of an Alex Bregman type hitter than he is a Yordan Alvarez type hitter. You wouldn't think that because he's a massive human being, but he's more Alex Bregman than he is Yordan Alvarez. So keep that in mind. I wouldn't make that trade, especially with where the and I'm not. Joey Loperfido to me is not a deal breaker. I like Joey Loperfido. I would include Joey Loperfido in a trade if it made a lot of sense. The two pitching arms are something that I hesitate with because I do think that Bloss is a big league starter. I think that AJ Blueball is going to be a big league starter. I have a very difficult time trading guy. I mean, that's three big league starters, two of them in the rotation.
It's more the pitching prospect that's turning you off.
Because Loperfido is going to be a corner outfielder.
The way I look, okay, so that changes the math a little bit, because if you were looking at possibly, and I know there's 1,000 options we've discussed as first base, but if Loperfido was a part of the first base future, then you would be basically replacing that with Vlad, and maybe
for a year and a half.
A year and a half, but that's kind of the window. I mean, that's what we're looking at. I don't think we can look really beyond the next year and a half with all the contracts that are coming up and got like Tucker and Fromber and Bregman, all these guys that could be gone. You can't really look past the next year and a half. And also, maybe this is someone jaded from years of fantasy baseball, but I just don't view pitching prospects as anything I'm ever willing to gamble on, even at the AAA level. I mean, obviously, in this organization, we saw Forrest Whitley, number one overall prospect, hasn't done a damn thing.
Hunter Brown's been pretty good. Spencer Arrighetti's done some things for you. Ronel Blanco was never like a highly touted prospect, but he's been very good. Framber Valdez came up through the Astros. Christian Javier, Luis Garcia, Jose Urquidy. Like you have
they
to
came up, but I'm talking about just not getting enamored with. Oh, he's a prospect. Like as far as like a top 100 guy.
I also don't like the window take because I don't operate that way. Like I'm not. Oh, the Astros window's 2 more years. I think the Astros can sustain winning for a long period of time. Are they a World Series contender every single year? No, but I'm operating with the sense that I want to win every single year, and making these win now trades diminishes the opportunity for you to win over time.
I think that's the thing that I don't – that they've been too narrow-minded and nearsighted in terms of not seeing the big picture lately because they're so focused and maybe crane-driven on the window always being open and still chasing the championship. Because you look at it, and from that perspective, I'm sure they're thinking, hey, we're set for next year whether JV's there or not and whether he gets to his vested innings or not because of the fact that we're going to now include Arrigetti and Brown and Blanco in the mix with Fromber for 1 more year, Tucker for 1 more year. If I add Vladdy for 1 more year, even if Bregman walks away, I've got a Bregman type that kind of replaces him offensively in the lineup, that I could see it being where Dana would never do it, and Dana wants to rebuild the farm system, and I could see Crane and Bagwell pushing for, hey, here's another big name that's also a big bat that, you know, the eye test tells us could really help this team. And that would be a difficult proposition to weigh because I'm with you. At a certain point, as much as they might be in go-for-it mode, you can't just completely, you know, turn the other way towards the fact that you have to identify your farm system as a level of importance to try and rebuild it.
8532, Colt fan. Yankees are also in the Vlad sweepstakes. Could they outbid the Astros? I think every team in baseball could outbid the Astros, yeah. Quite frankly. And I'm not – like, I'm not – I think the Astros pipeline in minor league system is better than they get credit for, but I don't think it's one that's like coveted around Major League Baseball by other teams like Toronto. Even though like that argument that the fact that James Clay drafted a lot of the Astros players in the organization, I think that could go both ways. It could be like, well, Click, I hate the Astros. I'm not operating with them, and I would tell my boss, whoever the general manager is there, let's not do business with them. Or it could be, I like all of these guys because I drafted them. Mm-hmm. So it could go either way. I have no idea. 713-780-ESPN. Astros hit the halfway point after their game tomorrow against the Mets. They have a shot to be above 500, which would be borderline miraculous. Miracle Mets. What is your Astros first half report card? 713-780-3776. What is yours, Blankers? You're handing out a letter grade. What is your report card for the Astros in the first half?
I'm going back and forth. I'm going to say a C+. I'm going to say a C+ because they've been so disappointing to start the season. Yes, you can factor in the injuries. Yes, they survived enough to tread water and get back to 500. But this is a team that everybody, including Vegas, was projecting to be one of the top five best teams in baseball, and they've underachieved. I mean, we talked about how many times they found a way to lose games. Guys that were supposed to be getting the job done from the back of the bullpen to offensively the Alex Bregmans and the Abreus and just the missteps. They're lucky to be where they are. They're too talented to be where they are. I can't give them anything higher than a C+.
I'm going to give them a D because that's passing in Texas. They didn't fail. They didn't fail the first half. Like, they're in the race. They're around. They've certainly finished this first half stronger than they started it. But as we talked today, 40 and 40, if I would have seen 40 and 40 at the start of the season, I'd give that a D. I'm not gonna change and grade it on a curve. So I'll give the Astros a D, even though it is trending in the right direction. I have liked what I'm optimistic about them making a good grade in the second half because they finished the first half strong, but barely passing. D for Branham.
I'm kind of in the middle of you guys. I'll go C-. I think just purely, you know, you are what your record says you are, like Bill Parcells would say. I think Jeremy's right. It is a D grade, but I do, I guess, grade a little bit on the curve because of just how decimated with injuries they've been, especially with the starting pitching rotation. So I will give them a C-. It's definitely not what you would expect. It's not something I would have signed up for at the beginning of the season, but it is trending up. And I think they do get a little bit of benefit of the doubt because of the injuries.
Well, I think that and the rookie manager and whatever the influence is of the front office, there's no way they should be where they are based on everything that's happened to them. So the fact that not only are they back to 500, but they're within striking distance of a playoff spot, to me means that they got something right enough to where I wouldn't go as low as a D.
713-780-ESPN. What's your letter grade for the Astros? First half-ish, almost. 8665 C+ says they need to go 54-28. That's Why do they have to go 54-28? Like, what does 54-28 give you? I don't think that you need to go 54-28, quite frankly. The Astros are in the race. I think they can win this division with less than 54-28 in the final 82 games.
I mean, it did take 94 wins against the playoffs last year.
No.
Just win six.
The last playoff spot in the AL last year was 89 wins.
Yeah, just win six more games than the Mariners are the rest of the way, or, you know, whatever you do to chase the Red Sox and Royals and Twins. And you're in, and that's all that matters.
Blaine says, I say C+. The midterm helped their grade at the end of the semester. That's not a bad way of looking at it. Their midterm, they nailed their final, so it bumps up their grade. Vegas projected this to be a top-five team in baseball. I have a wins total bet on the Astros at 91.5. That's why I think the Astros can still go over the preseason Vegas win total. It's going to be tough for them to do that. I think it's in play. I think it's going to be very, very difficult to do.
Unfortunately, I got action at 92.5.
Oh, really?
Yeah, that was the bet that – and I think you killed us for it, for making the team bet, but that was the bet that Joe, Sean, and I made it last time we were at LaBerge back in April.
Why did I kill you for that?
I think it was the idea of pooling our money instead of making three separate bets.
Oh, yeah, that was weird.
No, it was back in March. It was before the season.
Yeah, let's all collect our money and all put $25 in and make one $25 bet. Like, it gains odds in some way. Like a parlay would be a little different. 3106 B minus grade. Looked up stats this morning. We see first in batting average, up there in hits. We have been statistically bad with runners in scoring position, and obviously the lone saves across the board, giving them some credit due to the injuries of the season, getting back to .500. So people are grading on the injury curve here. 8341. If you're looking at the first half and talking about the first half as a whole, C-. So there is that grade, and then somebody asked us over under 95 wins for the Rockets this season, or the Astros this season. Under
for sure.
Yeah, I'm not going to hit that one. A couple of others here going with a C+. Says Robin Cypress. H Town Boy says 3-. Wesley is at a D. Alex B-. Orange Wagon Enjoyer says an F. Doesn't seem like he's enjoying that wagon a whole lot. MB says C, and then Astros run Major League Baseball says a C. So what does that average out to, roughly, from what all of the grades were?
About a C.
About a C. Maybe C-. I only saw one B there, the B- from Alex.
I think there was a couple B-.
Oh, on the textures, you're right. Yeah, maybe it was a C. Maybe it's a C when they average it all up. Our mathematicians can do it, like our crack staff of Twitchers. All right, 713-780-ESPN, HRMP listener line, 713-780-3776. I gave it a D, but I do think they can have a strong second half. The biggest reason I think they can have a strong second half when we come back. It's the Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN
92.5. Live from Constellation Field for a Veritex Community Bank Roadshow, this is the Killer Bees
on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
Bees live from Constellation Field in Sugar Land. We'll be joined by a Sugar Land spacer, Colton Gordon, coming up at 4:45. Bad Tech Boulevard at 4:30. And Heidi Watney will be joining us at 5:30. So jam-packed Killer Bees the rest of the way. 713-780-ESPN. So I gave him a D. You're at a C, C+, somewhere around there. The aggregate grade was about a C from everybody that responded. Now, I am bullish on the Astros for the second half. And the reason that I'm bullish about the Astros in the second half, and Robert Flores, go Cougs, might disagree with me here, is because of their pitching. The pitching has been up and down this year. They've used like close to 30 pitchers, right around a team record for the most pitchers used, I think, in a non-COVID year or something like that. And they're fringe guys. Like, they've used a lot of fringe type of pitchers to throw a lot of innings, especially early in the year. And the Astros had the worst ERA in baseball for, what, about a month? But you're starting to see them climb and climb and climb and climb. And the reason why is because I'm bullish on their starting rotation. Like, we came into the season, their 1-2 is going to be Fromber and Justin Verlander. Their 1-2 right now might be Ronel Blanco and Hunter Brown. Like, we're talking strictly production. Like, if you're starting a playoff series tomorrow, I'm sure Fromber gets the game one start. But Ronel Blanco has been your most productive starter, and for the last 2 months, Hunter Brown has been your second most productive starter. Could very well be the pitcher of the month in June. So those two guys have been phenomenal. You were not expecting them to be your one or two guys. If Justin Verlander comes back, and yes, there's mystery there, and there's mystery with how the Astros handle injuries, I'm taking them for their word that it is a neck issue. and that Justin Verlander will be back. Now, I don't think he'll be back until after the All-Star game, but I do think that Justin Verlander will be back. And I don't think Justin Verlander is this great Justin Verlander anymore, but I still think he's a sub-4 ERA guy that can be a middle-of-the-rotation starter that gives you 6 innings a night. I think Framber Valdez has been really stinking good outside of a couple of wild horse outings. So you go Framber Valdez, who's top-5 Cy Young type of guy. Ronel Blanco is having a Cy Young type of season. Hunter Brown, who's going to be the pitcher of the month in June, in all likelihood, potentially. You throw in a Spencer Arrighetti, who's like, yes, it was the Rockies, but okay, there's some promise there. There's some upside there. There's some hope there. The Astros starting rotation looks pretty nasty all of a sudden.
Yeah, I mean, we were talking a segment ago about, you know, them not wanting to give up pitching prospects, looking for the big picture, and that's definitely legit. But for the short term, for the rest of this season, you can't afford another injury, but because of the fact that you are assuming you're going to get JV back with the way that the rest of these guys are pitching, if Arrighetti isn't just a product of playing the Colorado Rockies and he has figured some stuff out, now you add him to the mix of the guys that you mentioned. You say, look, I'll go to bat with that team. I'll take that team into any series and feel like that I've got a legit chance to win because they have been, I don't want to say dominant, but the top half of their rotation, especially because of Blanco being someone that we didn't see, you know, turning into be this guy. I saw him, you know, we saw him a year ago out on this mound on ESPN night trying to figure it out as a starting pitcher. So the fact that he's now in the conversation of an All-Star and a Cy Young candidate should give you all the hope in the world that as long as the bats are healthy and they continue to get healthier, you may get an extra arm back depending on what happens with Garcia McCullers. I think it's a pipe dream to say both of them are going to come back, both of them are going to be starters, but you have the chance to get better there too. I'll go to bat with that lineup.
Not only I think you can afford one more injury to the starting rotation. Now, it couldn't be like a key figure because Jake Bloss avoided injury. Like, if you figure that Bloss is capable of being like an Arrighetti type, then he this year, I like his future, then I still think you can get away with one more injury prior to the guys coming back. Now, if it's a Framber or a Ronel or a Hunter, okay, well, that really stings. But on top of the rotation, like, there's 6 guys there, I think, that should be back by the All-Star break. Framber, JV, Ronel, Hunter Brown, Spencer Arrighetti, and then Jake Bloss in the mix if you need a spot start. Lance McCullers, I don't know if he'll come back. But Luis Garcia is making a rehab start tomorrow or Saturday. Like, he's going to be back in July at some point, probably late July. You look at the bullpen. Josh Hader has been pitching really well. Ryan Pressly has turned it around. Brian Abreu has been pitching really stinking good. So your big three is back on top of what I like a lot in the starting rotation. You have found some middle relief. Credit to Dana Brown for finding some middle relief. One he already had in the system, Seth Martinez. The other was going out and finding Taylor Scott and inventing who Taylor Scott was. Taylor Scott has been phenomenal. I'm not going to like say this King guy who is like has made it yet, but he's looked pretty promising. And then you've mentioned Penn Murphy, who is a guy, whenever he has pitched in the bigs, he's been capable of getting guys out. And Penn Murphy's not going to be one of your top 3, top 4 relievers, but could he be your last reliever? If Penn Murphy's your 13th pitcher on your pitching staff's pretty dang good. So this pitching the Astros pitching's been the problem. The Astros pitching has been awful. That is true. Like, the numbers are the numbers. But no one talks about the potential that the Astros pitching has because the pitching has been good as of late. If Brown and Ronel pitch like this all year, if Framber is who he is, if JV comes back healthy, if Arrighetti gives you a little bit of what he gave you yesterday, that's a really good starting rotation with a guy, maybe two, that are going to return from injury, and the big three in the bullpen are starting to pitch like the big three in the bullpen.
Yeah, no, the concern for me, and maybe it's just, you know, because of what we've been through with this team before, is that when you see guys that have any kind of an injury, they can't kick it for the rest of the season, and maybe it's going to be longer than that. I want to believe you got 6. I want to believe Bloss is that guy. I liked what I saw from him in his first start, but I don't know how much confidence I have that he's going to finish the rest of the year healthy because of the fact that, especially as a pitcher with the wear and tear and the extra stuff with the clock, I'd be a little leery of that. I might be still exploring opportunities to get some insurance, but at the same time, if I got to live with those 5 guys for the majority of the season, those are 5 above average guys the way they've been pitching. Arrighetti would be the weakest link, but if JV comes back, you're in a good spot.
Yeah, I'm bullish on the Astros pitching staff all of a sudden. A pitching staff that has been mostly bad this year because they've had to use some extreme numbers because of the injuries. But you get right, everybody stays pitching the way they are, I'm bullish on this pitching staff. 3.667 hitting with runners in scoring position has been more of a cancer than the pitching this year. I think it's right. I think those are 1A, 1B. The pitching early in the year was dreadful. You weren't in ball games, but hitting with runners in scoring position has been a major problem. Like, yep. The Astros lead the league AL in average, or right there, one or two. They're one or two in slugging percentage. It kind of depends on the day. But they're like fifth or sixth in runs. Why? Because they struggle with runners in scoring position. So it's hard to disagree with that 3.667.
Yeah, no, and that's something that we had talked about when they were in the top two teams, top two or three teams in baseball from an average perspective. They just weren't getting timely hits. They're getting more timely hits. You got to believe, again, you're in a good spot, because if you're getting outfield really well until he got hurt, that you would hope that the numbers are going to go up, because now you got Lo Perfetto on a more consistent basis. Chaz seemed figuring out a little bit. Then you add Tucker to the mix and a more consistent bat at first base with Dubon. You would think that, especially because Dubon's one of your best hitters with runners in scoring position, making sure he's in the lineup almost every day, that hopefully that they improve greatly in terms of their runners and scoring position efficiency.
Texter says, I hope that they go back to the six-man rotation to protect some wear and tear and injury. I agree with that. I think it's in the best interest of the Houston Astros to do that, whether it's Bloss in the meantime once he comes back. And, yeah, there's always concern with elbow shoulder, but it seems like they didn't think that was very serious from the moment that he left the game, and he's already, like, tossing again. But would it shock us if it flared up again and it became something greater? No. Like,
the Urquidy thing where it's always every few months.
It's a bunch of them. It's Urquidy. It's France. It's Christian Javier sleeping wrong on a pillow and then needing Tommy John. Garcia was more of a rupture in a game, you know? Like, he.
But there were times previous when they would do the same thing about he.
With Garcia?
Yeah.
I don't remember that at all.
Yeah, in seasons past, where I think there was a season where it wasn't a pillow injury or something like that, but that they would say.
I don't remember Garcia, like, ever even missing a start.
I think he did.
I'll bet you a Coke.
Okay, fine.
713-780 ESPN. I like the idea of the six-man rotation, too, though. It's going to be interesting in Louis. If Bloss stays up, like, what they do with Garcia, because does he give you a three-inning start? Do you kind of, like, ease him back? You have to ease him back. Is he pitching a piggyback? Is it just a six guy, and then you turn it over to the bullpen after that? If he is the six guy, what happens to Bloss, who is currently the six guy? It's fascinating. It's fascinating what they would do.
And it's so tough because he's got to get more and more stretched out, and you don't want to push him too far because he is coming off surgery to where you don't want anything to happen where it could set him back for the long term and get over this surgery. So it will be interesting to see and how they relegate someone to the bullpen, or if they feel like, hey, I've got enough arms now with starting pitchers that this guy's capable of going into the pen and being a guy that I can use in a different role but being effective, because – again, that will affect what they do at the deadline, but you won't know on Garcia until then, because he's only going to throw, like you said, what, a couple innings, two or three innings, or 40 some pitches.
Maybe they can get him up to three or four innings by the time he pitches in the bigs. And I don't want to use Garcia out of the bullpen. Like, I think that's bad news. Even if you're using him out of the bullpen as a piggyback, I think it's bad news, because I think he needs a very set, very structured schedule. If you have him come into the fourth inning to piggyback somebody else three innings, it's not, you know, there's a little bit of a gray area. It's not an exact specific time. And I want a guy coming off of Tommy John having an exact specific time. So maybe he could pitch the first three, Bloss could pitch the next three, and then you turn it over to the bullpen. That sort of piggyback, I would be in favor of that. But if you're doing that, and that's your sixth starter, now you're really limiting the numbers that you have in the bullpen. So the Astros are going to have some pretty serious questions on how they want to handle it. But it's one of those cross that bridge when it comes, because what if Justin Verlander never comes back? And now we're talking about a very, very much different thing that's still a month away from happening.
Yeah, and you and I have gone back and forth on that in the past. I just feel like, from my experiences too, I feel like you're right. You go back to the Jake Odorizzi of, you know, I have a set routine. I got to stay in that routine. I know every fifth day this is my routine. This is what I'm doing. I think it's a lot more taxing, especially coming off a medical procedure like Garcia is coming off of, to get up, get warm, get loose, you know, and do it in a quicker fashion, and or if you're going to leave him in the pen and in the playoffs, you start trying to use him as a reliever. I think that's more taxing on your arm.
Yeah. A couple of draft items, because the second round of the NBA draft is happening right now. If the second round of the NBA draft is happening on a 4:30 at a Thursday, is it really even happening? The Rockets traded the 44th pick for A.J. Griffin earlier today, former mid-round draft pick in the first a couple of years ago. Jamal Shedd is now a Toronto Raptor. I'm not exactly sure how they got him, but seeing tweets that he's a Toronto – Kelly Eco tweeted it – said that he is a Toronto Raptor, so that's my new favorite team in the Eastern Conference. I will be rooting for the Raptors in the East. Follows another Houston Cougar who played in Toronto, Hakeem Olajuwon. So that's where Cougars go, to Toronto, Hakeem and now Jamal Shedd. And then apparently Rich Paul is threatening teams that are drafting in the second round that if they pick Bronny James, he's going to go to Australia.
Oh, this was you knew this kind of stuff was going to be coming. With all that, can I push back on your favorite Eastern Conference team?
No, the Raptors are my favorite Eastern
Conference
team.
How can it not be the Pistons?
Because I have a recency bias.
Oh, because you got two Cougars
Pistons
on the Pistons.
Pistons are second.
Yeah, you got two big-time Cougars on the Pistons.
Yeah, that is true. I love them equally the same, then. I'll go with that. Okay. Tied for first favorite Eastern Conference teams. Actually, I mean, you have Jairus Walker at Indy, too. The good thing is they're all going to the Eastern Conference, so I don't have to ruin my Western Conference allegiance. All right, 713-780-ESPN. Killer Bees broadcasting live from Constellation Field. We're watching batting practice. We're seeing the exit velos, the launch angles on the big Texas scoreboard out in center field. A Bad Take Boulevard. What belongs on Bad Take Boulevard this week? It's the Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
Time to welcome some new takes.
Right this way.
To Bad Take Boulevard.
If only there was something in your head to control the things you say.
It's the dumbest argument ever.
With the Killer Bees.
Can I just say that I'm an idiot for listening to you?
Who belongs on the list this week? Bad Take Boulevard, Killer Bees live at Constellation Field in Sugar Land. ESPN 97.5, 92.5 night. Not too late to get tickets. ESPN 925, promo code $9.25 tickets. All right, what belongs on Bad Take Boulevard? 713-780-3776. The first one of the week, and we have to lead with this. Jim Schlossnagel. No, Jim Schlossnagel. Jim Schlossnagel earlier this week saying that he left his family to be the coach at Texas A&M. I took the Texas A&M job thinking this would be the last job that I ever took. Jim Schlossnagel, you make the list. Bad Take Boulevard, you lead it off this week. What do you think about Schloss?
I absolutely should lead, and he might lead for a couple weeks. It's just an awful look, and as we talked about, you either don't talk about it or you own it, but it's an awful look in the way he handled everything. And now you've got players even coming out and saying, you know, about how the utility guy came out and was crushing him today.
Yeah, that doesn't really bother me, though. Like, you're not paid to make friends with the players. You're paid to win ball games for your university. Like, I've been arguing with people about this, saying, well, you know, he's not a player's coach. He treats his players like crap. No one likes him. He's not being hired to be liked. He's being hired to win baseball games and going to 7 College World Series appearances. He went to 2 College World Series in 3 years at College Station. So, like, that's his job. That's what he's being paid for. So, like, that stuff doesn't bother me. Like, a player saying a coach is mean, oh well.
No, I would say it's one thing if it's like a utility-type player, but if it's across the board and a lot of your players, now it could affect future recruiting classes and guys talk to other guys. And, man, I heard this dude, it could discourage some guys to go, you know, playing for
him. We'll see. They're pretty big in NIL. Let's see these Aggies transfer to Texas and see how disliked Jim Schlossnagel is. All right, next up on the list, Evan Grant. Evan Grant blamed Schlossnagel and staff leaving as the reason the Aggies didn't win at all. We know that Evan Grant, he's dead at Fort Worth. I think McTaggart buried him once. He says, I guess one question here would be, how could your staff be focused on the task ahead when they're clearly negotiating new deals? Evan, brother, the Aggies led the College World Series 1-0. They led after 6 innings. The fact that they were leaving to Austin is not the reason they lost the College World Series. It's not the reason that they, you know, blew it in the last 3 innings. It's the reason they lost Game 3. So, terrible take. You land on Bad Take Boulevard, as you usually do.
And don't you assume, too, that the players had no idea that the coaches and everybody had this, that they were working on this in any way, shape, or form?
What's that?
You would believe that the A&M players had no idea that this is why I kind of blindsided them at the end of the year. They're playing the game, and if they don't know that that's happening, then, you know, I don't think that that's going to affect the outcome of the game. And like you said, they were winning 1-0 after six.
Yeah. Yeah. That to me is a terrible take. John McClain also lands on Pad Take Boulevard for a Jim Schlossnagel tweet. John, after the final out was made in Game 3 of the World Series, after Tennessee beat Texas A&M, he said the Aggies' pain shouldn't be unbearable. Yes, they lost to the Vols, but keeping Coach Schloss means they beat the Longhorns. He took the Texas job the next day.
he had several where he was trying to bash Schlossnagel, too.
Was he?
Yeah, because then after that, yeah. Then when he found out and started realizing, I think probably someone hit him up and said, there's a pretty good chance he's gone. Then he started just bashing on Schloss.
He said, don't worry, Aggie fans. You might have lost the game, but you keep your coach, and that means you beat the Longhorns. Whoops. About that, John. Todd the Show makes the list. Todd the Show's been making the list quite a bit.
Yes.
Bad Take Boulevard. Todd the Show, Saturday, 12:47 p.m. Chaz McCormick was in the lineup. This was before Saturday's game. He said on a tweet, why are they, the Astros, forcing Chaz into the lineup? Do you know what Chaz McCormick did later that game?
Two bumps.
Double dong Chaz McCormick. After Todd the Show was questioning why in the world was Chaz McCormick in the lineup. Thank goodness Todd the Show is not filling out the lineup cards and the Joe Espada is.
Yeah, Todd the Show has been very, very critical of lineups over the season and even last year. So
Todd's been very trolly towards Astro fans this year, I've noticed.
And he likes to spar, even on Twitch.
He likes to
defend his points and get into it with the good listeners.
He's been trolling the Astros Twitter pretty much all year, talking about like the Dusty people, the Maldi. He's been going after Yiner not being as good as Maldi. He's been very, very trolly. Yesterday, Michael Carroll, what would we call Michael Carroll? Our producer extraordinaire.
Production expert.
Production
expert.
Yeah.
He should stick to that. ESPN sent out a graphic yesterday. Hey, we're covering the NBA draft. You can listen to it on ESPN 97.5. Who are the Rockets going to draft? Michael Carroll said Donovan Clingan.
I think he said something like, let me just leave this right here. He looked like he was going to be an expert, and then he had to own it and comment on it today and go, oops.
That's why they keep you in the cave where no one can see you and no one can hear you, unless you're on the Zelda show.
Except, Friday nights, Comic Cast.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. And Friday nights on Comic Cast. They let you on before noon and after 7.
So you're saying not prime time yet for Michael Carroll.
Not quite ready for prime time Michael Carroll. We're kidding. He's great. Tank Dell, look, no one is off limits. A blind guy has made Bad Take Boulevard. My mother has made Bad Take Boulevard. No one is off limits when it comes to Bad Take Boulevard. So even though we love Tank Dell, go Cougs, Tank Dell makes the list. We discussed this the other day.
You just made the
list!
Tank
Dell listed his top five most undersized athletes of all time, and Tank Dell makes the list. His top five, Maurice Jones-Drew, Darren Sproles, Spud Webb. No problem there. But he included two boxers, Gervonta Davis and Floyd Mayweather. Yes, they were undersized, but what does boxing do? They put you in weight categories, Tank. Love you, Tank. Love you. But you can't put boxers in the most undersized athletes of all time whenever they're fighting in weight classifications.
And he's got enough people around him to remind him that there's been some pretty good undersized athletes in the city of Houston that we highlighted.
Yeah, he missed out Calvin
on the list.
Murphy. He didn't have Altuve on the list.
That might have been the bad take.
Yeah.
It's not having Jose Altuve.
Well, Altuve, Calvin.
I could see him not knowing Calvin, though. Like, that's not a bad take.
Yeah, sure.
Simone Biles.
Yeah, I could see.
Altuve's the worst one,
yeah.
Though.
There's a lot of small gymnasts, too. Like, yes, Simone Biles belongs on the list, but I can understand leaving off Simone. I can understand leaving off Calvin. Like, he probably doesn't even know who Calvin Murphy is. But leaving off Altuve is having a little lack of feel for the city, which is unfortunate because I know Tank has a feel for the city.
Go Cougs.
Yeah, he puts on for the city. Hashtag go Cougs. We love you, Tank Dell, but you make the list this week. Sorry.
You just made the list.
We talked a lot about how weird stuff happens at Baylor. Weird stuff happens at Baylor. The Branch Davidians, Dave Bliss, Art Briles. Now, I know that this isn't necessarily in Waco, but it does involve Baylor. Three Baylor doctors relied on unqualified residents for risky heart surgeries at St. Luke's, feds allege, and St. Luke's is actually in Houston.
Yep.
Baylor College of Medicine, St. Luke's, and Surgical Associates of Texas, PA, agreed to pay a $15 million settlement. That seems light.
It does.
St. Luke's?
15, yeah. Yeah.
Especially because you're affecting like life and death outcomes and multiple surgeries at the same time.
You need to research your doctor, people.
Yeah, no, that concern. My child was delivered at the same time. Now, that you didn't say they were
doctors. Yeah, you're talking about heartburn.
We're now almost a few past this. It's late, but
you should research your doctors because. I listened to, this actually turned into a show, but I listened to a podcast called Dr. Death, where this guy who's just like, I don't even know. I got to, like,
they made
med
it,
school.
They made it into a documentary. Yeah.
I think they made it a doc and a, like,
they
a show.
They did on Peacock. Yeah.
Was it? Yeah. Yeah. So, and this guy had no business in the operating room. And I think he like lied and it for his way to medical school. Just putting together, like, every operation he had were wrong. Like, he was guessing in there. And he was, like, leaving things, body stuff. Like, research your doctors.
Look, the thing that people don't realize, there's obviously someone that's at the bottom of the class no matter what field you're in, right?
Sure.
And that holds true for lawyers. That holds true for doctors. Yeah. That's true. Any profession you want to think of, you could be having the doctor who was the worst in their class.
I heard Dr. talking on Rogan the other day about how, like, these medical schools are, like, making it more lenient for some of these medical school, like, people to get to doctor. And Dr.
Scary.
Phil's like, I want them to skim the fat.
Turn away a lot of people.
It's wild, though. All right, that's Bad Table. All of you made the list. We'll get to Colton Gordon. Sugarland Spacer when we come back. Lefty from UCF. We might have some words. But Colton Gordon when we return. It's the Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5. First, I got to tell you about the greatness that is the Houston Sabercats. Sabercats regular season finale coming up on Saturday. Sabercats Stadium, the Texas Showdown as the Houston Sabercats host the Dallas Jackals. 7 o'clock start. Gates will open at 6 o'clock for you. It's the final game of the regular season. So we're going to have fan appreciation, doing all types of fun fan giveaways to salute you for what has been an incredible season. Sabercats have already clinched a playoff spot, have already clinched home field advantage, and it's also their mascot Scratch's birthday. So they'll decorate the night, have appearances from Houston area mascots joining in all the fun. Great spot for the kids. They love when the mascots are out there. And then another great element for the kids, how about post-match fireworks? Stick around for the post-match fireworks and meet the players on the pitch in the post-match special. Head to HoustonSabercats.com/tickets. Use promo code ESPN20 to receive 20% off your tickets. The last regular season game of the year before the Sabercats head to the playoffs, and it's the Texas Showdown against Dallas. Don't miss out on all the rugby action this Saturday. If you can't make it out to Sabercats Stadium, you can watch the first ever local live broadcast on CW39. But head to the game and get your tickets at HoustonSabercats.com/tickets. Use that promo code ESPN20.
You're listening to a Veritex Community Bank Roadshow, live from Constellation Field. This is the Killer Bees
on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
Killer Bees broadcasting live at Constellation Field in Sugarland. ESPN 97.5, 92.5 night out at the ballpark and being joined now by lefty pitcher Colton Gordon. Live from Constellation Field. Colton, thanks for taking a few minutes hanging out with us. You could take a shag and fall off. They made you do that. Even you're going to be a radio star with the Killer Bees.
I hear you, man. I mean, gotta be with the guys and helping out side balls all day. It's hot. A little bumpy through the day, so couldn't do it. But I'm so happy to be here. Good to be here.
Colton, I'm curious from the standpoint, it's the point of discussion. A couple of different things, but first thing is the pitch clock. I mean, we talked about it in the past. There was a lot of times in the past where you see guys that didn't have to prepare for the pitch clock. They were kind of huskier, bigger guys. They could take their time strolling around the mound, doing things in between visits. Now that you've got to be more fit and more prepared for the endurance of the fact that when you're pitching, you got to go.
For sure, absolutely. You got to be on your game. You got to have a game. You got to be understanding what you're trying to do, what pitches you're making, what pitches you're trying to make next. And that way, it feels a little slower out there. You don't have, like you're saying, all the time in between pitches to do that. And so you try to do that a little bit beforehand, have a better pregame, maybe be in a little better shape. And then once you're out there, kind of rip it and attack the game plan.
You probably had to deal with that for quite some time. Minor league ball, but I'm pretty sure it was in college ball whenever you were pitching college at UCF, right?
I believe so. It just started then. It was a little longer, which was nice, kind of a little bit of a transition, and then has shortened up over time. But
Doing it for as long as you have, is it something that now it's second nature? Like, it doesn't even come up really?
Exactly, 100%. I think at first it was trying to navigate how to use that in your favor. I'm a guy that moves fast anyway, but like you mentioned, planning, kind of adjusting to it, being in better shape, second nature at this point.
Now the other thing that comes into play is going to be the automated strike zone and the fact that you guys have been experimenting with it to see if the major leagues are going to be ready for it. What's been the biggest adjustment with that, and are you in favor of it?
I'd say the biggest adjustment is kind of ignoring it, as in you still got to get strike one, get outs, and the strike zone is a strike zone no matter who's calling the pitch at the end of the day. And so I love a classic strike zone from an umpire, from my opinion. Mm-hmm. But, again, doesn't matter. It's not up to me.
But, like, from that perspective, it's only you and the catcher that can challenge it. But then are you worried, too, about the fact that, you know, if you're challenging, is the umpire going to get a certain way with you?
Right. I mean, you hope not. You hope you're challenging pitches you think are strikes. And we're all kind of working on the same thing, working together to have a great game. And I'm not trying to show up the umpire just like the catcher's not. And we just want our pitch if we think it's there. Simple as that. And try to leave it at that. Shake the guy's hand at the end of the day and move on.
Colton Gordon joining us live from Constellation Field in Sugarland. You pitch for Team Israel in the 2023 World Baseball Classic. That's an honor very few people have, to represent a country, playing for the country in whatever the sport is. Your case, obviously, baseball. What did that mean to you, and what was that experience like?
So meaningful. Experience was unbelievable. So eye opening to the world of the stage of baseball and how much it means to people around the world to sell out the Miami Marlins field in Miami, to be there playing Dominican Republic, Venezuela. I mean, just some of the top-tier nations of baseball. And for me to experience that and represent a nation for me, my family, obviously the country of Israel was so cool. And for me, my grandparents were there, and just super, super cool to share it with loved ones and family around.
Did you feel like, because again, some of the backlash of the WBC is because of the timing of it, now pitchers got to be ready earlier, maybe up their game a month or two earlier, and then we see some of those guys, then if anything happens in the bigs, now you're saying, or when your real season starts, oh, it was all WBC related. Do you feel like that was a big adjustment?
I mean, it's definitely an adjustment. I don't think a huge adjustment, just because I'm trying to get ready to go for the season anyway. So I want to be at a certain shape getting into spring training. If it's a couple weeks early, so be it. You know, so if I'm doing my job in the off season of getting ramped up for the season, mm-hmm. it kind of is what it is. And not only that, I think it helped me, because coming off of that and going back to spring training to then start the year, it was something that I was now prepared to be in games, be in big games, be in front of a big amount of people in a stadium, and something that I saw, felt, done, been around. And at that point, when we went to the season, it was like, all right, now we're just transitioning to what normal baseball season would be.
Colton Gordon, left-handed pitcher for the Sugarland Space Cowboys, joining us on the HRNP guest line. You have to be aware, of course, what's happening with the big club when it comes to the injuries to the pitching staff. A lot of your teammates either hurt, or teammates that have made the jump up to the big club. How much is that something that weighs on you? You think about maybe you're an injury away from making the big club. How do you keep your focus with all that going around?
Control what you can control. Enjoying the moment, being around. We just won the first half here in Sugarland, and man, we got such a good group of guys, and just having fun and playing ball. And when the time comes, obviously I want to help them. Obviously I want the best for all my friends up there, all the guys up there. And like I said, when the time comes, I'll be ready to go. But in the meantime, win baseball games here, be a part of this team, help guys get better, help myself get better, working with the coaching staff and just enjoying it.
We were talking about the fact that, you know, you hear a lot of dings on the Astros not having the farm system of other teams. But the track record starts right here, because when you look at guys that have come through Sugarland, maybe they weren't on a top 100 list, but in pretty rapid fashion in a lot of cases, guys get elevated to the big leagues. It's a short jaunt down the highway, 59, and you're at Minute Maid. And it seems like that's got to be something that you are actually creating a positive environment by saying, great bunch of guys, but also the fact that the organization may believe in you no matter what your number is, you can get to the bigs pretty quick.
No doubt. And add fuel to the fire. You know, don't rake us high, whatever it may be. Like, you know, we know what we got here. We know what we're a part of, and we're ready to help out any way we can. And awesome by the organization part that they believe in us too. They know what they have, as in a great group of talent, people on and off the field here. And so whenever that time comes, that time comes.
It always fascinates me whenever you have the first half and second half champions. You have the split season. Like you said, you celebrated the first half championship. How do you keep the focus in the second half? Now that you've already locked in the first half title, you just, hey, double chance. What does Mickey tell the guys?
Yeah, it's bigger than the first half. We all have goals from a personal standpoint, from a team standpoint, and that doesn't stop in June, right? Baseball season goes till September, October. All of us want to help out the big league team at some point, right, in whatever role that is. By doing that, we got to do our jobs here and continue to get better every day here. And so that doesn't stop really ever, yeah, right, going into the offseason, whatever it may be.
You've been getting some good props from Dana and the Astros. Do you feel that, like, the correlation being this close to the big league club, like if they're off or they've got time or if he's not traveling, that they can just come 30 minutes here and check you guys out? Because it seems like he's obviously a great evaluator talent anyway, but when he starts being able to short jaunt, see you guys and know this is what I got, and then he's talking about you, it seems to help.
It's awesome. It's super cool, right? It's awesome to be noticed or appreciated or however you want to view it. And then, like you said, right up the interstate, right?
Yeah.
I mean, we're right here. So on top of that, it's really easy.
It's only 30 miles away, but it'd take you an hour and a half to get there if you catch it at
the wrong time.
Right?
Wrong time. No
yeah,
doubt.
Just don't catch
no
track.
Doubt.
Know those
no
shortcuts.
Doubt.
Colton Gordon joining us. You know, we talk a lot about the player development in this system, especially with the pitching staff. And you look at some of the guys who've had success, Framber Valdez, Christian Javier, Luis Garcia, Jose Urquidy, Hunter Brown, Spencer Arrighetti, teammates of yours. In what ways have they enhanced you as a pitcher? What have they added to your repertoire? What have they put in your mind? How has the Astros' developmental system helped you?
Wow. Don't know where to start on that one because it's in so many different aspects. But I will say from an attacking the batter standpoint, how can I be my best self, right? How am I going to go out and be my best self today on the mound whenever I pitch and then use that to my advantage to get outs, be efficient, get deep into the ball game, and give ourselves a chance to win at the end of the day, every time. And sometimes that's knowing the other team, knowing what my pitches are doing that day, knowing myself, and kind of balancing that all out.
Well, how much, too, because we hear from JV, we hear from others, hey, the system here, analytically, is one of the best in terms of processing numbers and of really kind of making that a huge part of what you're doing in your pitching development you mentioned. Have you noticed that, like, from this organization specifically, that the numbers really truly matter?
Absolutely. I mean, numbers matter, right? Numbers tell you answers. They give you reasons as to why things are happening. And they give us a great blueprint or breakdown even as to why something's happening and then how to use that in your advantage, how to get better from it, how to build off of that, how to keep it the same sometimes, right? How do we just maintain that level of excellence at whatever you're doing?
Are you a guy that dives into spin rate and all that?
I am and I'm not. Yes and no. I liked it because, like I said, it gives me an answer as to how I did that day or where I'm at, but I don't like to overanalyze it because at the end of the day, I like to compete and I got to compete. And sometimes it's as simple as getting strike one, being efficient, getting outs, and I kind of let the data just tell me how I did at that or what I need to adjust week in and week out.
Yeah. It's a new era, huh? Velo, chasing spin.
Right.
You know, different
right.
metrics than, you know, what you're accustomed to, getting strikes, getting outs.
Yeah. It's not just, what am I throwing on the gun today and you know, where am I locating? It's, you know, 10 times more data.
You're also talking to the guy that throws, you know, low mid-90s on a good day. So I'm just hoping maybe one day my high 90s will come. But in the meantime, I got to do what I do, which is throw strikes and get outs.
He's saying, I only throw mid-90s. Yeah. I could never break glass.
His boy, Arrighetti, found a little extra in his back pocket yesterday, too.
My guy, Spence, man, he's doing it. We've helped each other so much over the years, and he's helped me. It's been so much fun. I'm so happy for him. It's so cool.
It's just a start.
He gets after it every week, and, you know, he's finding his different ways of getting better and adjusting, and he's just getting started. Seriously, it's so cool.
Colton, thanks so much for hanging out with us for a few minutes. Looking forward to watching your plight and, you know, see your dream come true. Appreciate it. Best of luck.
Absolutely. Yeah. Thank you guys for having
me.
Thank you.
Colton Gordon, left-handed pitcher for the Sugar Land Space Cowboys, AAA affiliate, of course, of the Houston Astros. How much is this Texans schedule really going to hurt the Texans? It's the Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5. I know you've been thinking about turf for your yard, whether it's because you're tired of mowing, it's easier to maintain, it's nicer, better for the kids, better for the pets, whatever your reason, maybe just to get your weekend back. I know that you've been thinking about it. You've been thinking about it. You need to reach out to Cinlon. Why not? Cinlon will give you a free consultation, free estimate, easy to do, quick to do. It's half hour of your time. Why wouldn't you do it? Then you decide, but at least know your options. The greenest turf company, not just in color, but also in theory. Sinlawn's products, the best in the game. Top-of-the-line products made right here in the U.S. of A. Lifetime warranty, too. They put their money where their mouths are. In-house crews. You don't have to worry about the nightmares of a job that's contracted out. Fully insured, fully bonded. The customer service is elite. Sinlawn controls the process from yard to yard. Sinlawn created the industry. They're the sister company to AstroTurf, the stuff in the dome. And Sinlawn has nearly two decades in the game, the only turf company in Texas that can say that. Go to 975sinlawn.com right now. That's 975-S-Y-N, 975sinlawn.com to improve your yard today. Sinlawn, artificial grass never looked more natural.
ESPN 97.5.